So we are holding on pay dollar at Olive, fourth line. Talked yesterday about Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon and then Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi. Both of them were working for a while for the government, catching criminals, and all the back and forth about that. We also mentioned in that connection. Okay. So pay dollar number dollar, fourth line. So we talked yesterday about Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi and what they did catching Ganovim. We also mentioned in that connection about Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon having been very fat and therefore that he did the test to check whether, in fact, he is a tzaddik and his body won't decay by having an operation and having fat taken out of him. So now, continuing on that topic. And then later on, at the top of Amud Beis, we're going to get back to the story of Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon, what happened after all this. So the Gemara tells, "Ki havu mikli Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi v'Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon ba'adi hadodi." When Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi and Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon would meet each other, and were saying they were both very fat. Have ayo bakra the todi be'nayhu. A team of oxen could pass between them. V'lo have a naga, and it wouldn't touch them. That's how much their respective stomachs stuck out. Okay, Maharal says doesn't necessarily mean literally. It's a metaphorical thing, but whatever.
Sure.
Yeah. And in fact, one of the Mefarshim says the reason why the Gemara is mentioning it, besides the fact that we said before about Rabbi Elazar b'Rabbi Shimon with the whole operation to take out fat, when we said yesterday at the bottom, we said that the same thing happened to him, one of the Mefarshim, one of the Achronim explained, doesn't just mean the part about that he was catching Ganovim and Eliyahu made the same objection to him as Rabbi Shmuel ben Karcha did to Rabbi Elazar, but rather that he also had the same thing done as far as an operation to remove fat, so therefore it's a direct continuation. They were both fat people. Okay. Omr lehu ahi matrunisa.
That is considered by anonymous.
Yeah, I guess. It showed they were big people, Pasha. Yeah. Omr lehu ahi matrunisa. So a certain matron, a Roman, a Goyisha lady, a Goyisha noble woman, as she says to them, "Benechem enim shalachem. Your children can't possibly be yours. How are you able to have relations with your wives? If you're so fat." Omr lehu, they answered her, "Shalahen godom shalanu. Theirs is bigger than ours." Meaning, Rashi says two explanations. One is, our wives' stomachs are even bigger than ours. Or Rashi says the second explanation is, they have a greater taiva for it than we do. So therefore, according to the first explanation, Mefarshim say, the point is they're saying, so what, you're arguing, look, you know they have children. Fine, you want to argue maybe that we're not the fathers, or before they're the mothers, right? Obviously, they must find a way. So in that case, they can find a way with us also.
What do you mean? They must find.
Obviously, there must be some way. Even a woman who has a very large stomach like that is somehow. Or some say they answered her differently. As the pasuk says, "Ki ka'ish gurasa." In proportion to a person is his strength. Meaning, Rashi says, "Gurasa" means aver tashmish. The bigger the person, the bigger the aver. So yeah, they you can make it work. Ikadamri hachi amrila, and there's yet a third version that they told her. Ava dechekas sabasar. Love presses the flesh together. So we have taiva, therefore we press ourselves. The famous expression the Alter Rebbe brings in Tanya in a different context, Ava Dechekas Labasa, that this is the idea behind the Eivishte is Mitzamsim, his Ur, to create a world, to create a place where there can be a Jewish people, etc., all because there's Ava for us. Okay. The question is, according to any of these three explanations that they answered, why are they even bothering answering her such a ridiculous thing? That she's saying, "B'nei chemenim shalachem." V'haksiv al tan k'sil k'ivalte. The pasuk doch says, "Don't answer a fool according to his foolishness. Let him talk his foolishness. You ignore him." What do they need to answer? What? Ken Fishavel, yeah. The answer is Shalei Lahotzi Laz Al Bneihem. Yes, but the reason why is because they didn't want that there should be that there should be rumors start being spread about their children. If they don't answer her, then she's going to say, oh, it must taka be true, and she'll start spreading rumors, etc. So to nip that in the bud, they had to answer her. They had to give her some kind of answer of how it's possible.
Otherwise
she would have thought that, yeah, their children are mamzerim, and she'd start spreading rumors about them. Okay. Amar Rav Yechon. Eivrei de Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi k'chemes pasteisha kabin. The eiver of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yosi was like a bottle. Chemes is actually a bag of skin that they use like for a wine bottle or whatever, that holds 9 kabin. Now, what do we mean by eivrei? There's a number of different explanations. On the face of it, eivrei means the eiver tashmish, like what we were just talking about. And in fact, Marshall seems to take it that way, because he does. Doesn't necessarily mean literally it was, but the Gemara wants to say that he had a tremendous taiva for relations, for that kind of thing, but he controlled it. The point of telling us in the Gemara is to tell us how powerful his Yetzirah was for it, and yet how he controlled it.
How did he control it?
The way to use it only for the right purposes, to use it for period of Rivia, to use it to do the mitzvah of Oina with his wife, etc. You find in a few places, there's other places where the Gemara has similar expressions, lahavdil, about, for example, about Paroi, that he had a large one where it's also meant to indicate how shot of Mazima, how into Znus he was. So in the case of the Tanoim and Amaroim that we're going to talk about over here, it's Fakir, it's according to the Marshal, it's to show how powerful was their taiva for it, and yet how they controlled it and used it for the right purposes. With that said, there's other explanations also. The Ritva brings that eivrei can mean like his arm or his leg. Like when you want to measure how large a person is, you measure the circumference of their upper arm, the circumference of their leg. So it means that, like those parts of their body, they were big, built, powerful people. So if you measured around that, yeah, it would be the size of, yeah. And then there's another explanation that eivrei means the amount of food they would eat. Anyway. Amr Papa, Eivrei de Rabbi Yochanan kechemes pas chameshes kabin. And Rabbi Papa, in turn, says about Rabbi Yochanan as the one who reported about Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosi. In turn, Rabbi Papa comes and reports to us about Rabbi Yochanan that Rabbi Yochanan's Eivrei was like a bottle that holds 5 kabin. So smaller than Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Yosi, but still pretty substantial. Ramri labas shleishes kabin, or others say 3 kabin in size. And Rabbi Papa's own Aver, according to these various explanations, was the size of the baskets they make in Harpanya, which is a name replaced in Babel. They're also largish baskets. Tosfos points out, according to the surface meaning of it, not according to the Marshal, that it's talking about had their taiva and how they successfully controlled it, but if it's on the surface meaning, that it's talking about the size of their bodies, why is the Gemara mentioning it? The reason is, Tosfos says, Shalei Lahotzi Laz Al Bnei Adam Shem Kach, that you shouldn't start spreading rumors about such people. For if you say it means that they were big and bulky and fat, then like we had before with the Matarinitsa, don't think just because a person is large like that, they're unable to father children. You see that they were nevertheless able to. Or it can mean, Pasha, don't make fun of such people. You see a big fat person who weighs a few hundred pounds, don't make fun of them. You see that the great Tanoim and Amaroim, some of them were also like that. Speaking of Rabbi Yochanan, he says on himself, I am left over from the beautiful ones of Yerushalayim. Meaning, he lived 100, 200 years, he was there about 200 years after the Churban. He doesn't mean that he lived in Yerushalayim before the Churban. He means, I'm descended from the families of Yerushalayim before the Churban, and if you want to have an idea what they looked like, I'm the last remnant of it. Mefarshim also explained what part of what Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out is usually you have the famous story of Rabbi Yeshua in Tainis where the Kaiser's daughter says to him, he wasn't very attractive looking, and the Kaiser's daughter one time says, you know, how tough and such a smart person and so unattractive, and he explains to her, Rabbi Yeshua, the Tana. And Rabbi Yeshua explains to her with a mashal that sometimes the good things come in unattractive packages, just like he says to her, wine is best kept in earthenware barrels rather than in gold and silver containers because it spoils in that. So the point is, Rabbi Yeshua says over there that they're not always the beauty and chachma go hand in hand. Rabbi Yochanan is pointing out, in my case it does, and that's how it was in Yerushalayim. We've learned in Kedushin that there were 10 kavim of beauty came down to the world, 9 went to Yerushalayim. In Yerushalayim, there were also great chachamim. There's midrashim and Eicha Rabba that go into great detail how wise the people of Yerushalayim were before the Churban. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, I'm the last example that you can find of such a person who has the physical beauty as well as the chokhmah going together. Yeah. If you want to see some idea of what the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan was like, nicely kosa de kaspa mevei silki. Take a silver cup that came fresh from the silversmith. So it's still glowing hot. It's pure. The silver is clean. It's not tarnished at all. V'nimliyek patsidaya derum nesumka. Fill it up with seeds from red pomegranate seeds. Put a crown of red roses around the lip of the cup. And put it someplace between the sun and the shade, like where it's half sunny, half shade. And the glow that comes from this cup that's made up like that, gives you an idea of the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan. Gemara asks, is that so? You're telling me Rabbi Yochanan is one of the great, beautiful example, is one of the great examples of beauty in history. Well, I'm a mar, but we learn in a braisa, shufre de Rav Kahana mein shufre de Rav Abahu. The beauty of Rav Kahana was similar to the beauty of Rav Abahu from a previous generation. Shufre de Rav Abahu mein shufre de Yaakov Avinu. Shufre de Yaakov Avinu mein shufre de Adam Arishin. It means in a physical sense, it means also more in a ruchistic sense, all over the place. It's brought from Siddus, the idea that, for example, Yaakov Avinu fixed up in the world much of what Adam Arishin messed up. Mm-hmm. Interesting thing, actually, in connection, you know, last week's parasha we had about Reuven moving Yaakov's bed and losing his bechorah because of that. There was an interesting thing that I saw, B'pnimis Einyonim, the idea is that what it should have been, Yaakov was saying, was supposed to fix up what Adam messed up in the world. Part of that should have been, therefore, Reuven stands in for Cain. So if he had done the right thing, he would have made up for what Cain did, but he didn't, and therefore, yeah.
Yaakov had to repair God.
So the point is Yaakov wasn't able to fully repair what Adam did because of Reuven getting involved over there. So yeah, anyway.
Adam was the first Baal Teshuva.
This is true, yeah. Reuven also did his own, was the first public Baal Teshuva. Anyway, so V'ilu Rav Yochanan like a Hashemle. Now Rav Yochanan is missing in that list. You go from Rav Abahu back to Yaakov Avinu. Rav Abahu is a Talmud of Rav Yochanan. If Rav Yochanan is so beautiful as we just described, it should say that Rav Abahu's beauty is similar to Rav Yochanan's.
Beauty, very subjective.
The answer is Shaini Rabbi Yochanan de Hadras Ponim Lehavdilei. The answer is Rabbi Yochanan did not have Hadras Ponim. What does Hadras Ponim mean? Rashi says it means a beard. So Rabbi Yochanan had a beautiful face, but he didn't have a beard, and that knocks him out of contention among the people who had a semblance of Adamarishin.
Marshal's beard.
Yeah. Some people don't grow a beard naturally. Not that he shaved it, Chas v'Shalom. Uh-huh. Some people naturally don't grow one.
He has big eyelashes.
Okay, could be. But anyway. There is, you're mentioning about it being subjective. Marshal takes a bit of a different view of it. He says, we find, for example, usually, very often, the Torah describes an attractive person as Yufei Toya or Yufei Mare. We find a couple of weeks ago by Rochel, for example, Yufas Toya or Yufas Mare, by Yosef in this week's parasha. And Rashi explains that Yufei, that Toya and Mare are two different things. Toya is the shape of their face. It just says Mare. I don't think it says Yifat Toyar by her, but whatever. Rashi explains in one of these places by Rochel, I think, that Toyar is the shape of the face, and Mare is like the glow of the skin. Based on what we said over here about the glow, it means Rabbi Yochanan had that, but he didn't have the when we say Hadra Ponim like Havrele, it means he had a beautiful glowing skin, but he didn't have the attractiveness of features like Rav Abahu and Yaakov Avinu and so forth. And therefore he's not listed in that list.
Why did Hashem make him this way?
Different people, they Hashem makes different ways. Some people, I mean, they're Toya and Mara, because they're two different things. Obviously, they must represent two different things in Ruchnius. Rabbi Yochanan had the one, he didn't have the other. They don't necessarily have to go together. Okay. In this connection, since we're talking about Rabbi Yochanan's beauty, Rabbi Yochanan have a oz over Yosef Ashare Tvila. Rabbi Yochanan used to go and sit by the gates of the mikveh. Omar, because he said, Kisalkan Benois Yisroel Mitzvilas Mitzvah, when Jewish women come back from toveling for the mitzvah, so to become tahor for their husband, Lifgu bi, let them meet me. This way they'll have children who are as beautiful as me and as learned in Torah as me. We know it's a well-known thing that what a woman sees right after she toibles has a very powerful influence on the children she conceives afterwards. In fact, and in Shulchan Aruch it brings in fact that if after toibling the first thing a woman sees is a double tummy, she should go back and toibble again. Nowadays, in our mikvah, it's for that reason you make sure the first one she sees right afterwards is a mikvah lady who is a Jewish woman. But yeah.
They used to wait for them outside the mikvah.
So he would wait outside the mikvah, yeah. Omer le Rabbanan. What? So the Rabbanan asked him, aren't you afraid of an Ein Hara? That you're showing off your beauty. Now, Tosfos points out, leaving that aside, what about, for example, the Gemara mentions in Pesachim that if you meet a woman who's coming out from the mikvah, you end up with a spirit of znus, the yetzahara of znus starts seizing you. Okay, so that's one of the answers. Tosfos doesn't bring that answer, but yes, they looked at him, not that he looked at them. And in fact, one of the Mephoshim points out, yeah, based on what you just mentioned, Rabbi Yechon had long eyelashes, as we learned from Baba Kama, therefore he didn't see them anyway. Anyway, Tosfos themselves gives the answer over here that if you meet her, Samaz, or Rabbi Yechonan was sitting there, that's different. Or Tosfos answers that when we say over there, Ochta, the Ruach Znunim, means if you meet her before she has a chance to get dressed, like right when she comes out of the river. Because they didn't have necessarily purpose-built mikvahs in those days. Women would travel in rivers and ponds or whatever. Mashenkin here, we're talking about he's sitting outside the gates after the women are fully dressed. With that said, there is also Ben Yehoyada talks about that when they're asking him, aren't you afraid of an Ein Hara? What they mean to ask him in a sort of delicate way is, aren't you afraid of that Ruach Nunim, which in turn will lead to an Ein Hara against you? Anomi Zara de Yosef Kafina. So he answers them, I am from the descendants of Yosef. Delay Shaltaba in a bishop. And Ein Hara has no power over the descendants of Yosef. As the Pasuk says, Ben Perdas Yosef, Ben Perdas Alei Oyin. Yosef is a fruitful son Alei Oyin. What does Alei Oyin mean? Literally means on the eye or on the spring. But Omer Rabbo, I'll tukri Alei Ayin ala Oyle Ayin. Not Alei Ayin on the spring, but Oyle Ayin. They're above. They go above the Ayin. They're higher than the Ayin Hara. So therefore, an Ayin Hara has no power over them. The Medrash actually brings that this is a reward to Yosef for what happened in this week's parasha. He didn't allow his eyes to have anything. Well, his father appeared to him at a critical moment, sure, but still, he prevented his eyes from going where they're not supposed to, and therefore his schus is therefore that his children are protected from Ein Hara.
Isn't that an invitation to be tested by the Eivishter, just David Amela, who asked to be tested?
So what are you talking about, Rabbi
Yechonon?
But he's saying I'm above an Ein Hara. That's how it is with the descendants of Yosef. Therefore, I'm not worried about the Ein Hara, especially since I'm doing it for a good purpose, in order that these women should meet a tzaddik and have good thoughts about who they're. It's brought in Svarim, for example, that when a man and when a husband and wife are having relations, it's appropriate to think about a great tzaddik, because it has an effect on the conception. So that's a similar idea. You don't have to think about somebody else as a person. You can think of them as a symbol of Kedusha. That's when I was in Chassam classes, that's what they taught us, to think about somebody else as if... Yeah, but they're not thinking of him as, as if I'm with Rabbi Yechonon, but rather they're thinking of him as a symbol of Kedusha. Okay. Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina says we have a different limud of this idea that the descendants of Yosef are higher than an Ein Hara. The Pasuk says in Yaakov's bracha to Yosef, "V'yidgul aroy v'kerav ha'aretz," they should multiply like fish in the midst of the land. Meaning, "Madogim shabayam mayim machasim oisem ein ayin shalatis behem," just like fish in the sea, the water covers them, and therefore the eye does not dominate them, and therefore an Ein Hara doesn't affect them. "Avzarish Yosef ein ayin shalatis behem," so it is with the descendants of Yosef.
Why did Yosef Ben Perek just said you only have two children?
That's the point. In other words, fruitful. I mean, he had many descendants, but there's a lot of different explanations. If you look at Rashi over there on the pasuk and on the pasuk over there in Vayechi, you can see a lot of different explanations of what Ben Perek means.
What does it mean?
The symbol meaning is it means fruitful.
Right.
In the end, that turned out. Itaka had thousands and tens of thousands of descendants. In fact, actually, as a side thing.
From where?
Between Menashe and Ephraim, yes. Matter of fact, actually, an interesting thing. Out of all the Shvatim, not to go too far off a tangent, but out of all the Shvatim, Menashe had the highest rate of growth between the first census in Parshas Bamidbar and the second one in Parshas Pinchas. And even more so, they increased by 20,000 men. And when they once they're in Eretz Yisrael already, they complain. In particular, those two Shvatim come to Yeshua and complain, "There's not enough land for us. The portion that you assigned for us is too small." And Yeshua explains to them the portion's already set, but there's forest in your area, go clear that, you can build yourself new cities over there. Haytochen, how are they all of a sudden increasing so rapidly? Because once they're in the land of Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden the birth rate starts increasing dramatically. Just Menashe and Ephraim had that special bracha through Yosef, yeah. But Ben Perdach, so he was fruitful after all. We have members of them with us now, but yeah.
How do we know we have members?
Because we know we have members of all 12 Shvatim with us. It's a known thing. Remind me when we get to in Sanhedrin and Perek Chelek, we'll talk about it. That's Shem Batim. Okay. Onward. Okay, so now that we mentioned the beauty of Rabbi Yochanan, now we're going to have the famous story in that connection of him and Rish Lakish. Yom Echad have a Kisachi Rabbi Yochanan B'Yardin. I wonder if Rabbi Yochanan was bathing in the Yardin River. Chazir Rish Lakish V'Shovel Yardin Abasri. Rish Lakish saw him and jumped into the water after him, and jumped into the river after him. Some of the Mepharshim say, in fact, this goes with what we said before, that Rabbi Yochanan didn't have a beard, because he didn't. He looked from afar like a woman. So Rabbi Yochanan, so Rish Lakish, who at the time was a robber, as we're going to see in the story, he jumped in, figuring, you know, yeah. Okay. Omalei, so Rabbi Yochanan says to him, Chelach la'oraisa. Your strength is very you're very very strong. You have the kind of strength that's needed to be able to bear the burden of learning Torah. Marshall explains it a little differently. He's saying that this tremendous strength of yours will be controlled and will be brought under control with Torah. Omrele, so the Rish Lakish answers him back. Shufrach l'nashi, your kind of beauty is appropriate for women. Again, because he looks from afar like women, yeah, like a woman. Yeah. Amale, so Rabbi Yochanan tells him, "I hadrasbach, if you do tshuva, yahivna lachachosi b'shpira minai, I will give you in marriage my sister who is even more beautiful than me."
Also seems to say that he was about tshuva.
So now, what do we mean by hadras? What do you mean by hadrasbach? Lachora hadras means come back. So it means return, but return to what? Lachora, if he was a robber his whole lifetime. So based on this, and also based on one explanation of part of the story further on, Tosfos explains that Rish Lakish originally was a Talmid Chacham, then he went off the derech and became a bandit and a robber. And we learned in Gittin that he also at one point fell in with a group of Ludrim, of gladiators or cannibals or some such thing. But now Rabbi Yochanan is telling him, I remember you back from the old days when you were a Talmid Chacham. Come back. And Tosfos Taka points out, based on some other Gemaras as well, that we see that the Rish Lakish, even before Rabbi Yochanan got a hold of him over here, was in fact a Talmid Chacham. Why did he go off? I don't know. Kabbalale. So Rish Lakish accepted on him. Money. Then he wanted to go back across the river to get his gear. And he wasn't able to go back. Rashi says he wasn't able to jump with the same strength as before. As soon as he took on himself that he's going to learn Torah, already that weakened him. So, mind you, I mean, even after that, by the way, Rish Lakish still was pretty physically powerful after that. There's a couple of stories, the same sugya in the Yerushalmi that I was mentioning yesterday in Terumas, that talks about the dinim of Goyim are threatening to kill a bunch of Jews and they single out one person or whatever. In that connection, the Gemara tells two stories of Rish Lakish, one of how he saved the person who had been captured by Goyim, even though everybody else had given up on him, and another one where he forced some robbers to return Rabbi Yochanan's purse, money bag that they'd stolen from him. In both cases, yeah, he was still a pretty big, physically powerful guy. Okay. So, Akriye v'Asniye, sure enough, Rabbi Yochanan taught him Akriye means to read, as in Tanakh, v'Asniye, and he taught him Mishnayis, v'Shavye Gavirabah, and he made him into a great person, into a great Talmid Chacham. Fast forward now many, many years later. The Gemara doesn't mention that, but, you know, sometimes you have, you have the Pasuk in Shmos, for example, in Parshas Shmos, where Moshe runs away from Paro after he killed the Mitzri, and the next thing, in that same Pasuk, he comes to Midian and sits by the well, and meanwhile there's a whole 40 or 60 years in between, which the Torah skips over. Same thing over here, yeah. Okay. Yom Echad have a Miflugi B'Medersha. One day, they were sitting in the Bismedrash, and they were arguing on the following point. There's a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim that talks about hasayif, a sword, a sakin, and a knife, a pigya and a dagger, a roimach, and a spear, or magoyad, and a small sickle like you use with your hand to harvest grain, or magokotzer, or a large one that you use during the harvest season.
A roimach is a spear.
Yeah. So all those kinds of instrument, all those kinds of tools which have a metal blade, me'emesai mekabelin tumah. At what point are they mekabel tumah? Mishas v'malachton. Okay, they're all mekabel tumah when the work on them is finished. The question becomes me'emesai g'malachton. At what point is the work on them considered finished? Rabbi Yechanan Amar Mishit Tzar from the Kipshon. Rabbi Yechanan says it's once you forge them in the oven, once the blade is forged, then that's it. It's already ready for use, and so it's makabel tumah. Resh Lakish Amar Mishit Tzar Tzachen B'mayim, and Resh Lakish says no. You need another step. You need to also polish them with water. Polishing them. One explanation is it means hardening them, right? You dip them into cold water afterwards, and it toughens and hardens them. Another way of looking at it is also the water makes them shiny and gleaming. Tosfos discusses over here that there may be a difference also between our Gemara may be talking about when you're making them new. There's a different dinim apply if you have old ones that became rusty and now you're cleaning them up. Anyway, yeah. Okay. So you have this machlokes. Rabbi Yochanan is saying as soon as they're forged, Rish Lakish says you need the extra step of putting them in water. On the lay, Rabbi Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, listab listiyusa yada. The robber knows his craft of robbery. Meaning, Rashi says, you were once a listim, you were once a robber, therefore you're taka familiar with these tools and how they're used and how when they're considered finished. Let's first learn the Gemara. Let's first learn the words, and then we'll talk. Long after this, is many years later, we'll talk about. Well, right.
Supposed to do
that. We'll talk about. Let's. You know what? Fine. We may as well talk about it now. Okay. So a number of the Mefarshim take the view that Rabbi Yochanan is not saying it in a way as to embarrass him, but rather fakir. He's saying to praise him. You know what? Taka, your view must be the right one. You, Taka, are familiar with these kinds of tools, with these kinds of weapons. Therefore, yeah, your opinion is probably the more correct one. In fact, I once saw an explanation. I can't remember where now. That the point of Rabbi Yochanan, the point of Rish Lakish's opinion that they have to be put into water. Besides, like we said, to harden them, it's also to make them shiny. Part of when a robber is attacking a person with a weapon, part of what makes it work, the psychological effect is not just the weapon, it's the gleaming of it, the shine of it. So therefore, Rabbi Yochanan is saying, yeah, it's taka true. You taka have a point there. You know, you need that extra shine, put that extra, yeah. Anyway.
Threatening shine.
Yeah. Omalei, so Rish Lakish answers, Umaya Hanesli, you're calling me a listim, then what good did you do for me? Hasam Rebbe Karuli, Hacha Rebbe Karuli. There, when I was a robber, they called me Rebbe, and here they call me Rebbe. Which means, so Rashi just says that the word Rebbe has a double meaning. Rebbe just means a leader. So they called me Rebbe, as in the leader of the robbers, and now they're calling me Rebbe, as in the leader of the Tamar Chachamim. Tosfos, though, based on what Tosfos was saying before, Tosfos says that this is another proof that Rabbi Yochanan, that Rosh Lakish had originally been a Tamar Chacham before Rabbi Yochanan got a hold of him. Originally, before I ever met you, before I went off the derech, they called me Rebbe. Now also, what did you accomplish exactly? Amalei, and Rabbi Yochanan answers him, Ahanoi loch da'akvinach tachas kanfei ha'shchina. Yeah, but I accomplished for you that I brought you under the wings of the Shchina, that I helped you do tshuva. Now, what is taka going on over here? Like you said, first of all, I mean, Hayitach and Rabbi Yochanan is bringing up his past to him. So besides this that I said, Marshall says like this. After all said and done, I mean, we find throughout Shas that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish talked with each other like a chaver to a chaver, and as we'll see soon in our Gemara. Nevertheless, the fact is Rabbi Yochanan is the Rebbe and Rish Lakish is the Talmud. It is appropriate when a Rebbe feels it necessary, Zroik Marav Talmudim, you speak sharply to your Talmudim. And in this case, according to Marshall, Rabbi Yochanan felt that it's appropriate to, even if it means bringing up his past, which you're normally not supposed to do.
Why was it appropriate to speak?
Because according to Marshall, the idea apparently would be that not like the previous explanation that Rabbi Yochanan is saying in admiration, yeah, you know what you're talking about, but rather as an expression of criticism, as an expression of rebuke.
Why?
Because he's saying, "Fart, you're not applying yourself. If you had, this is a Rebbe is entitled to say to his Talmidim when he feels it's appropriate, you're not applying yourself properly. You're not concentrating. If you were, you would." So therefore, so Rabbi Yochanan uses this expression, and therefore, Rish Lakish answers him. So what are you saying basically? You're saying that I went and became a robber over there, and I was like this Nebuch guy over there. I couldn't accomplish anything. You want to say basically that I used to be this low class person, and now I'm a chashuv person. Why? I was just as important then. I was just as important then as now.
In a different way,
but still. Then Marshall continues that Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood what Rish Lakish was saying by that. He thought Rish Lakish is Pashut saying there's no greater advantage in being a Talmid Chacham than in being a robber, when really Rish Lakish just meant that as far as social standing, there's no difference. Don't think I was a Nebuch over there. And therefore he says to him, Dakuvinach Tachas Kanfei Ashchina. And he's also saying, look, after all, I brought you under the wings of the Shechina. In other words, I'm your Rebbe. And yes, I have the right to be Matan to you if I feel it's appropriate.
But he didn't understand. It seemed the Rish Lakish was saying, yeah, over there he was a Rebbe, and he had a greater...
In other words, according to that way of looking at it, Rish Lakish is not saying there's no greater advantage in being a Talmid Chacham. He's just saying, don't think that I was a Mezuzah, that I was a Nebuch over there, and now the advantage is that I'm more important. No, the advantage of being a Talmid Chacham over a robber is a different kind of advantage. But he didn't spell that out. Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood him as if to say, look, there's no advantage in it at all.
That's what he rebukes.
And therefore you get. And then, well, so therefore he says to him, Dakuvinach Tachas Kanfei Ashchina, that I get.
But it could have meant, look at where I came from and what I became. You should praise me for that.
Okay.
Rabbi Yochanan seems to be saying,
No, but by saying Maya, honestly, by saying what good did you do me, there's a few other explanations, and there's a few other explanations. Maharal says that the point that Rish Lakish is saying is, fine, of course there's a great thing in becoming a Talmid Chacham as opposed to being a robber, but Maya, honestly, in what way is it Hana? Mitzvahs lav lahanis mitnu. Mitzvahs are not a thing of Hana. And Rabbi Yochanan is answering him, that would be true if I got you to do one mitzvah or something, but like this, where I turned your whole life around, I made you into a new kind of person, yes, that can be called a hanah. Then you don't say mitzvah slav la'anah. There's lots of other
right.
Explanations also, as you could imagine.
Yeah.
So the purpose
of the rebuke is a misunderstanding from your...
So according to many of these explanations, it comes out that there was a certain misunderstanding between Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, either about what Rabbi Yochanan said to begin with,
right,
that Rish Lakish misunderstood it as making fun of him and therefore replied sharply, or that Rabbi Yochanan misunderstood Rish Lakish's response, Maya, honestly. Yeah. Anyway. So now Rabbi Yochanan felt bad that Rish Lakish seems to be putting down the whole concept of becoming a Talmid Chacham and everything that Rabbi Yochanan did for him. Rish Lakish, and Rish Lakish became sick because of that, because of Rabbi Yochanan's kepeda. Asoy achse kabachya. Rabbi Yochanan's sister, who we said before was Rish Lakish's wife, because he did end up marrying Rabbi Yochanan's sister, came to Rabbi Yochanan and was crying. Omer lo, achse bishvil b'ni. Daven for him for the sake of my children. For the sake of my children.
Your brother.
Yes. So he says to her, he answers her by quoting a pasuk. Rabbi Yochanan answers her by quoting a pasuk. Ozva yisenecha ani achaye. Leave your yisaimim. I will keep them alive. In other words, don't worry about that. Well, wait. Let's learn the two lines of Gemara, and then I'll tell you what Maharal says about this. Afsei b'shvil amanusi. She says, at least do it for the sake of me, that I'm going to be a widow. Amalah. He answers her with the continuation of that same pasuk. And your widows can depend on me, on the Eivishter. So Maharal says, doesn't mean as in the surface meaning that the sister actually came to Rabbi Yochanan to ask. Are you talking to Rabbi Yochanan be such an achzer to answer like that? He says, all it means is that the situation was so grave that it would have been the kind of situation where the sister would have come to say to Rabbi Yochanan, and yet Rabbi Yochanan would have answered her so sharply. What happened is nobody actually came to, not that anybody actually came to Rabbi Yochanan. He maybe did not even realize, if I'm understanding Maharal correctly, Rabbi Yochanan may not have even realized that his kepeda caused Rish Lakish to be sick. So he didn't end up being moichel him. But
the Gemara puts it so sharply as if to say that situation was so grave and Rabbi Yochanan was so firm in that Rish Lakish had done that ill. But also Rabbi Yochanan was so firm in his understanding that Rish Lakish had done wrong by saying this this Maya Hanesli that he was not prepared to be Mochel him. But if he had, in other words, if he had known that he was sick from it, yeah, of course he would have been Mochel him, but he didn't know, so therefore, you know, he figured Rish Lakish has to come ask Mechila.
Maya
Hanes means what good did you do for me that before I was a Rebbe and now I'm a Rebbe. Noch nafshe de Rabshim min Lakish. So Rish Lakish passed away. The Habakamat star Rabbi Yochanan Basri Tshuva. And Rabbi Yochanan felt very bad about it. Now he realized what he lost. There was, by the way, in the notes in the Art School Gemara, they bring something from one of the Balei Amoser of Chaim Shmulevitz, a long detailed thing about how Rabbi Yochanan wouldn't forgive Rish Lakish because he felt that Rish Lakish effectively was saying there's no particular greatness of a Rebbe over a Talmud, right. and then therefore that breaks down the whole concept of Masoda, and therefore you couldn't forgive him for that, etc. Anyway. There was Rav Kahana was killed and then, at the end of Bava Kamma. Yeah, but one of the Mepharshim answers, the difference is, over there, Taka, it was based on, the whole thing was based on a complete misunderstanding. The fact is, Rav Kahana hadn't laughed at Rav Yechanan. He just looked like it because his lip was split. Mashenkin over here, the fact is, Rav Shlokish had said something offensive. Or at least something that Rav Yechanan could reasonably take as offensive,
Yeah. What exactly did Rav Shlokish
say? We just said, he said, Maya Hanesli, what good did you do me? So that's what we explained before. That's what we said, a couple of different explanations. One of them being that it's not a matter of hanah, it's a matter of mitzvah slav v'honis nitnu, or he's saying, like the Marshal says, that you want to claim that I was a nebach in those days, and now I'm socially acceptable, that's not the difference, etc. Anyway.
All of a sudden, he calls him Jim and Ben Lakish.
Yes. Rabbi Yochanan felt very, very bad about it. Omer Rabbanan, man lezel, so who should go and try to make Rabbi Yochanan feel better? Leis v'ledaiti, to go calm him down, to go make him feel better. Nezer, Rabbi Lozer ben Pedos, to mechadad in shmaite. Let Rabbi Lozer ben Pedos, the famous Rabbi Lozer the Amora, who was the Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish all those years, let him go because his teachings are very sharp. He knows his way. He knows his stuff. Also Yosef Kameh, so he went and sat before Rabbi Yochanan to take over from Rish Lakish. Call Milsa to have an honor of Yochanan, and whenever Rabbi Yochanan would say something, whenever Rabbi Yochanan would say a certain teaching in Torah, Amalei Tanya de Messiah, or Rabbi Lazar would tell him, yes, there's a braisa that supports what you say. Omar. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Ach Bar Lakisha, you think you like Rish Lakish? When I would say something, Rish Lakish would ask on it 24 questions. And I would give 24 answers. And that way the teaching would be very clearly clarified. By the way, why 24 and 24, by the way, Marshall says, because that way you have 24 answers, 24 questions, 24 answers, and the actual din, that's 49, as we might have mentioned in various places, you have memtes ponim, 49 different facets of Torah. Questions are good, yeah, okay. Now, after I'm responding to Messiah, look, whereas you, Rabbi Lazar, are saying each time there's a braisa that supports you. After all, I'm the shaka kamina. Don't you think I know what I'm saying is right? I don't need raias, I need questions to be able to clarify what we're saying. Interesting thing, by the way, the Alter Rebbe in Hilchos Talmud Torah, never in all of Shas do you find any example where Rabbi Yochanan says something and Rish Lakish gives him 24 questions on it. What happened to all those questions and answers? The Alter Rebbe says an interesting thing. That kind of thing is included in what the Gemara calls pilpul. Pilpul, the Gemara tells us, we learned back in the Dorim, is a gift that the Eibishter gave to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he generously gave it to us Jewish people. But it's not part of the Torah that was Marosha Kehilas Yaakov. Rish Lakish is, in other words, this idea, this concept that a person is able to come up with 24 questions, and Rabbi Yochanan comes up with, that Rish Lakish is able to come up with 24, this is all something that Moshe Rabbeinu from his Tovas Ayin gave to the Jewish people. It's not The Torah, as the Eibishter gave it to us, and is transmitted from generation to generation, and eventually compiled in the Mishnah and in the Gemara and all the later Sfarim, does not necessarily include that. Therefore, the Masadri Gemara didn't have a need to give us all of an example of all those 24 questions and answers. We have our Gemara that tells us that that's how it is. That's it. Therefore, we don't have it recorded anywhere yet. Okay. So now Rabbi Yochanan is walking around and ripping his clothes and crying. Now he's had to realize what he lost. And in fact, one of the Mefarshim says, the point is, Rabbi Yochanan now for the first time realized, all this time I thought of Rosh Lakish as a Talmud, or a Chavar maybe. Now that for the first time I realized how much his questions helped clarify the thing, in that sense, he's my Rebbe. Now I need to tear Kriya for him.
Now it's too late.
And he was crying. Crying out, Hecha at Balakisha, Hecha at Balakisha, where are you, Rish Lakish? Bahavakavsavach, and he's screaming so much, Ad Shach Daitimine, until his mind left him. He actually says, Nishtata. He became
demented.
Yeah, come on, all the time. Bor Rabbon Rachmiale, the Rabbonon at that point davened for Rachmanus for him, but Noch Navshein passed away. Which, by the way, there's a Ran in Nedarim who says, based on a Gemara over there, based also on this over here, that we see that when a person is incurably ill, you're allowed to tack a daven for them to die. The Achronim talk about this. Is that actually true lahalacha, or is it only for argument's sake? Anyway,
where did the daven
say? It says Baruch Rabbanu Nachmi. They davened for him and Noch Nafshe, and he passed away.
Does that mean you can't daven for a miracle?
Does that mean that they daven for him passing away, or rather that he passed away? And
no, in other words, the point is they davened rather than him going around in a shtata that he should just which, by the way, you know, when some. Somebody explains also, so why didn't they daven that he should, why Taka didn't they daven that he should regain his sanity? Because as soon as he does, he's going to realize it all over again, Rish Lakish is gone, and it's going to go just the same thing, is going to start all over again. There's nothing that can be done. I don't remember who said that one.
Because here it seems to be saying they davened for him.
They davened for him, no. Rachmi Aleh, Benoch Nafshe, and then their tefillah was answered in that he passed away. By the way, there's a Yerushalmi that mentions Yerushalmi Megillah that says that this happened, that it wasn't just from one day to the next. It was 3.5 years from when Rish Lakish passed away that Rabbi Yochanan was in such tzar that he wasn't able to come to the Beis Medrash until finally one day he came and taught them one last thing.
Which was?
It's over there in connection with the Dinim of Korbanos, I think. Anyway.
What did Rabbi Yochanan have a chumon on his sister who lost her husband?
Who says that he didn't? I mean, before, that's what I'm saying. That's what Maharal says. It's not that literally the sister came to him. We're saying that...
besides the fact that they wouldn't forgive each other,
So according to that vote from Reb Chaim Shmulevitz before, then it's he couldn't forgive him because he had been pagaya in the whole concept of a Rebbe and a Talmud. But again, what we said before, that the sister actually came and cried to him, according to Maharal, it's not that she actually came and cried to him, it's just it shows how serious Rabbi Yochanan's fate was on him.
And he didn't pick it up?
That who didn't?
Rabbi Yochanan didn't pick up the hint from his sister that he was going to...
Now, according to Maharal, the sister never actually came to him to ask this. The Gemara is just using it to express forcefully how strong Rabbi Yochanan's kateda against Rish Lakish was. But not that the sister actually came and cried to him. By the way, there is a bit of a sequel to this. There's Gemara in Tainus that mentions that one time Rish Lakish's son is sitting and learning something, and Rabbi Yochanan comes and has a conversation with him about it, which, by the way, also we see that it doesn't mean he literally went crazy right away. And the child's mother, Rabbi Yochanan's sister, comes and takes him out of the room, and he says, you know what, your father already your father already had his problems because of Rabbi Yochanan's faith. I don't want you to have the same thing. Okay. Now we're going to get back to the story of Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. So we said that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon did the experiment. He found that his body is never going to decay. He realized that everything he had done all this time was right. Nevertheless, Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon did not want to rely on this. It's true. He realized now that everything he had been doing was right. Nevertheless, he still felt he needs a kapara. What if maybe one person in all the time that he was catching ganavim, one of them was a tzaddik? Or some of the mafarshim say, maybe what if one of them would have had a descendant who was a tzaddik? So he accepted on himself Yisurin.
Which one?
As we'll see. So what would happen from then on is these were Yisurim, as in he had sores all over his body. So every evening they would put under him on between him and the mattress on the bed, they would put down 60 sheets. to absorb what's coming out of him from the source. 60, by the way, is not Tosfos, and a number of Mefarshim say that 60 is not necessarily meant Davke. It's one of the Gemara's indefinitely large numbers. Okay, Maharal explains the reason behind it. 6 directions, each direction you have 10, which is a Mispar Shalem, therefore 60 represents a certain degree of Shlemos. Anyway, okay. And every morning, even though you had all those layers of quilts underneath him, which should have absorbed all the blood and pus, nevertheless, every morning they would pull out from underneath him 60 basins full of blood and pus. And there was so much coming out from these sores that even the sheets, the 60 sheets, the quilts or whatever would be soaked through, and there would still be more dripping into you. Lamacha abila dveitsu shitin mini lachta. Kava means the pus, yes. Lamacha abila dveitsu shitin mini lachta. The next day, every morning then, his wife would make for him 60 types of lachta. Rashi describes lachta as foods that are made from figs, some kind of like porridge or something like that, soft food like that made from figs. V'achalu, and he'd eat them, so uvari, and then he'd feel better. Because figs are good for sick people. We find also, for example, in the story of the Churban in Gittin, Reb Tzadik over there fasting for every day for 40 years, that they healed him also by giving him figs little by little. V'achalu uvari, he would eat them and he'd feel better. However, his wife would not allow him to go to the Beis Medrash in order that Rabbanan don't pressure him, because with all the give and take over there and in the Beis Medrash, it could cause him a relapse.
Why would he pressure him for what?
No, to pressure him in learning. Learning is a very intense process, and she was afraid for his health. What would happen is every evening, Rabbi Lazar would say to the pains, my brothers and my friends, come. The Safra Amalahu Zilu, and in the morning he would tell them, go away, because it's going to prevent me from learning. Meaning he wants to learn. If he's going to be overwhelmed by the aches and pains, he's not going to be able to. You do learn by night, of course, but most of your learning is usually accomplished during the day. So therefore, if I'm going to have you sit in better, they should be at night. One day his wife overheard that he's saying this, that he's actually taking up, not only that he took on the yisurim to begin with voluntarily, but that he's actually controlling them when they come and when they go away. She says to him, look at this, you're bringing them on yourself. All this time I felt bad for you, and I'm taking care of you and making you the 60 kinds of lachta every day because I thought okay, you're sick. It's not your fault. Now I find out it is. You used up all of the money I brought from my father's house between food and between all the quilts that got disgusting and had to be thrown away, etc. Imrida, so she rebelled, Oslo based Nasha, and she went back to her father's house.
It always happens with women at the worst period of their husband's
life. Okay. However, 60 sailors, 60 people who had been traveling on ships came. Again, 60 is lav davka, they brought him 60 servants carrying 60 purses with money. They made him the 60 kinds of lachta. Now, what were these sailors doing there in the first place? Rashi says there had been a storm in the sea. They had davened to be saved in the schus of Rabbi Lazar. Sure enough, they were saved. And therefore, now they wanted to bring him presents. Tosfos explains a tiny bit differently, that they made a neder during the storm that they will bring him presents. And so now they're fulfilling their neder.
What did his wife say?
That she was out of the house. She didn't know.
She didn't know?
She didn't know, right. That's what we're going to see.
She came back.
Wait.
60 people bringing him.
So one day the wife tells her daughter, Zili Boki Babuch, my COVID, Hayden. Go check out your father. How's he faring? What's he doing these days? Astia, so she came, Amala, so Rabbi Lazar says to his daughter, Zili Imri Imach Shalanu Gadol Mishalahem. Go tell your mother that our wealth over here is greater than theirs. And I've got more wealth over here, I've got more wealth over here than you've got in your father's house. Don't think that I was left here without anything. The Eibishter provides.
She was complaining of him using all her money.
Yes, that's actually one of the Mefarshim says an interesting verse that he means not only it's greater in quantity but also in quality. You're worried that the money is all going to get used up. me, I'm being provided for through by the Eibishter, through these sailors, it's an inexhaustible supply. Okay. By the way, Rabbeinu Yonah brings on August, you know, usually we say that you're not allowed to have hana from Divrei Torah, ha'itachen, that he's having hana from his Torah. Because that's Torah, because like for example, to be paid for learning or teaching Torah or whatever, yes. The Rabbeinu Yonah answers, this is different. Parshat, he was sick, he takeh, he needed, so therefore, yeah. Okay.
And they made a neder. Why not take it from the other person?
Yeah. Okay.
Do you say that parnasa comes through the wife?
Ordinarily, but in this case, yeah. So Rabbi Lazar applied to himself the pasuk from Eishes Chayil. She, meaning in this case the Torah, not his wife, the Saka she left, is like the merchant ships. Mimerchak tavi lachma, she brings her food from afar. Now, through my Torah, that was yeah. And maybe so. You're saying that the we learned before that parnasa comes through the wife. Yeah, but now if the wife is not there, then the Torah stands in for that. Yeah, therefore the Torah is also called the feminine. Yeah. Okay. So he ate the lachta and he drank and he felt better. And now that his wife is not there to prevent him, he went to the Bis Medrash.
See?
Isolakameh shitin mine
dama. Don't listen to your wife.
Gashmias versus Rufius, remember we learned before.
Right.
And she meant well. Right? We'll see soon. Okay. They brought to him 60 samples of blood that there was a suffix that women had, whether this is dam nido or not. Now the point is, Rebelazer was now that he's back in the Bis Medrash for the first time, and however long they brought him samples to judge whether they're Tamei or Tahar. Now the point is that Rashi says there's only five shades of blood that are Tamei. Any other shade, the Lamaisa, nowadays we don't have the expertise. We'll learn in Nida in a couple of years, Bez Hashem. Nowadays we don't have the expertise to tell the fine differences of shading. Therefore, anything that's red or reddish or whatever is assumed to be Tamei Misafik. But in those times, they had the expertise. Taharinu, and he declared them all Tahar. So the Rabbanan are murmuring and making noises like Ba'amri, and they're saying, "Stop that! Let's go chad safek. How is that possible? 60 women come with samples, and all 60 of them are tar. There's not even possible one of them is a safek. Maybe not." Amalahu. So he answers them, "Imkim moisiru. If I'm right, and all 60 of them are tar, you kulam schorim. Well, these wives are now going to be with their husbands. So now all of them should end up having boys." Tonight, they should all become pregnant with boys. If not, then there should be one girl among them. What's the Indian? Why? There's one.
Shows that he's mistaken.
No, so one idea is because that Marsha says boys can never become Tomei with Nidya. Therefore, if they all have boys, it shows that he was right, that none of them were Nidya. Mashenkin, a girl, when she grows up, is going to become Nidya herself. So if any one of them was a girl, then it shows he was wrong when it came to that.
And what happened?
How you call them? Sure enough, all of them turned out to be boys. And all of them were named Elazar after him, in gratitude to him. One of the by the way, says another vort also, the word Nidya is Gematria 59. Therefore, he's saying, if any of them turn out to be Nidya, let's say one of them turns out was a Nidda, then yes, there'll only be 59 boys, but there'll be one girl. But if all of them were Tahar, then there'll be 60 boys, and therefore, Tafayim.
Well, so I'll be Shemani. Make a difference.
So, no, he's paskening based on his knowledge, of Halacha and his knowledge of the colors. That's not B'Shemayim. Lay further down on the Omer, we'll see something that's Tahar Min HaShemayim, where we'll get to that. Tanya, Omer Rebbe, Kama Piri Rebbe Bitla Rasha Zumi Yisrael. So Rebbe says, we learn in a Braisa, look how much Piri Rebbe this Rasha prevented from the Jewish people. Who is the Rasha? Rashi says it means, first of all, that it means the Romans. Going back to the original part of the story, they appointed him as the chief of police to catch thieves, and therefore all of this developed from that. Imagine if they hadn't. He would have been all this time in the Bis Medrash. All this time, there were other times when women came with Shilas on blood. And the other Chachamim were not such experts. They would have to declare them Tomei Misafik, and therefore period of Rivia is prevented.
So
like this, you can imagine if they had left him alone and he had been in the Bis Medrash all the time, yeah. Yeah. Then Rashi brings a Loshan Acher, which however Agoris Agra and some other Mepharshim say shouldn't really be correct, is that the Rasha over here actually refers to the wife, Hayitachen, she kept him from coming to the Bis Medrash all this time. Now, many Mepharshim don't like that explanation and therefore they take it out of Rashi because further down on the Omud, we're gonna see that Rebbe, after Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon was buried many years later, Rebbe wanted to marry this man to marry his wife. If she was a Rasha, Hayitachen, he would want her. Among the many explanations, I saw
he didn't
one.
Marry her?
No, he didn't. We'll see. We'll see later. But there is one very funny explanation that I saw to answer that is like this. Rebbe is saying kama period for Rebbe bitl Rishal Zumi Yisrael. And by Rishal Zumi he means, like Rashi says, the Roman government. What's going to happen? He says that, and now if that comes back to the Romans and he's calling them Rishal, he could be in real trouble. The Loshon Acha, therefore, is not what he meant, but what he could claim to mean. If they come and ask him, Hayitachon, you're calling us Rishal? No, I didn't mean you, I meant Rebbe Elazar's wife. But not that he actually meant that, but just that he could use it as an excuse. Now, when Rabbi Elazar Reb Shimon was about to pass away, Amalol the debate, so he says to his wife, evidently she had returned after all, Yadayne b'drabbanan d'rasichi alai. Now,
it was another one.
No, the Mashas was the same one. I know that the Rabbanan are angry at me, because Rashi says, look, all those years when I was catching Ganovim, some of those Ganovim were relatives of theirs. So therefore they're angry at me. V'leima aski b'shaper, and therefore they're not going to take care of my kvura and my hesped and whatever properly in accordance with what it should be. Oignin b'ibisoi, therefore what you should do is put my body in the attic. V'leitidchal minoy, and don't be afraid about me. Now, hayitachon, a person can say not to be buried. Okay. So, Marsha explains like this. Because there's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about that talks about what are the reasons why there's a mitzvah in the Torah to bury a body. There's two reasons. One is because of bizoyan, because the body is going to decay. It's going to be a bizoyan to the mess. And the other reason is mishum kapara. Well, in Rebbe Elazar's case, neither of those things apply. Mishum bizoyan, he already did the experiment and found that he's never going to decay. Mitzat kapara, he already had the yisurin. That accomplished whatever kapara he needed. Therefore, there's taka no reason. He needs to be buried at this point.
But it says we're like going to go back to
the offer after the offer tosher. Fine, but a tzaddik does not go back to offer actually. A tzaddik does. We have many stories of tzaddikim whose bodies were still preserved many years after. So therefore, he could be in the attic. Wait, we'll see. Eventually, he was buried. We'll get to it. We'll get to it later. Now, Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni says, the mother of Rabbi Yonasan told me that the wife of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon told her, she's speaking in first person, because she's telling the story. It was not less than 18 and not more than 22 years that I had him in the attic over there. You have a salikna. She didn't remember the exact number of years, I guess. I don't know. He have a solikna. When I would go up to the attic, I would look at his hair. He have a mishtamta b'nisa minei, and if even one single hair fell out of its place, have a osi dama, then blood would well up over there, showing that he still had a tremendous amount of chayos in his body, between 18 and 22. But one day I saw a worm crawling out of his ear. I felt bad. Uh-oh, it's starting over here. That night he appeared to me in a dream. He says, it's nothing. Don't worry about it. It's a specific thing. Because what happened is, one day I heard people making fun of a Talmud, speaking improperly about a young Talmud Chacham. And I was not moicha like I was supposed to. Therefore, I was punished with my ear. Now, why did it happen taka on this day? Rabbi Yaakov Emden says two possibilities. Either it was the anniversary of when it happened, or it was the day that young Talmud Chacham many years later passed away. So he passed away. They started going through his whole life story in based in Shemaila, and this came up.
So if Rabbi Shimon was alive at that time, he couldn't ask Mechila, or he was dead.
He didn't know. I guess that's an honor. He have also Beit Shrei Ladina.
You mean when he was in Shemayim?
No, he was during those years, while he was still alive, when he realized that he hadn't protested properly. Why didn't he ask Chaim Mechila? I don't know. Even if he did, still, first, you know. Okay. Kihava also Beit Shrei Ladina. When two people would come for a din Torah during those years, have a Kaimei Abava, they would stand by the door of the house. Omer Mar Milse or Mar Milse. Each one would say his argument. Nothit Kolome Ilise, but Omer Ish Poini Atachayiv Ish Poini Atazateh. And then a voice would come out from the attic, and the laws of Reb Shimon's voice that would say you're obligated to pay your innocent to pay. Now, Hayitachon, like you said before, Torah Lo Shemayimi. So one interesting answer is this was dafka by Dinim Mominus. Dinim Mominus, the Bali Dinim can accept whatever legal authority they want. We'll learn in Sanhedrin, for example, you're allowed to say that I'll accept this Dayanim Shloisha Roya Bakr. Three cowboys can be our Dayanim.
Yeah.
yeah, you're allowed to offer your halacha as long as they both mutually agree. The same thing over here. If they both mutually agree that they'll accept whatever they hear from the attic of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon's house, then it's okay.
For din Torah or for Shalom?
For din Torah. For din Torah, yeah. Okay, I guess we'll continue with the rest of the story tomorrow. So that's one way of looking at it. I mean, there's other answers also, including, again, Maharal tends to interpret these kinds of Gemara symbolically. But I think it's he who says that doesn't mean they actually stood there and there was an actual voice. It means his chus helped that during all those years, whenever you had two people who potentially might end up in a din Torah, his chus caused that the Eibishter would put thoughts in their head, you know what, forget about it, I'm not going to go to a din Torah, I'll pay what I'm supposed to pay, I won't demand what I'm not supposed to demand, etc., without having to actually go to a din Torah.
Accepted all these Yisurim. How's that a kapara of people that he turned in, that he affected their lives? How's that kapara? That's between.
In general, but in general, the Yisurim of a tzaddik are kapara for the dor. We'll learn about that in Sanhedrin. Also, we'll talk about the details of that as the Shem in Sanhedrin. One of the many ideas of it is that through this, that people see that the tzaddik is suffering, it makes them realize, you know, if the kim also shiurim milafan, if even the tzaddik has to suffer like that, how much more so we? And therefore, it makes them do tshuva. That's one of the many reasons behind how the Yisurim of a Tzaddik help.
People that he turned in, was it right or was that right?
So we said in the end it was right, but he himself was his mind wasn't at ease, and that's why he accepted the Yisurim.
Well, it was not.
And there may have been. There may have. Well, we said a lot of Mishnah Chassidim. Yeah.